Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by T. Shane Johnson, a former Marine Corps warrior, motivational speaker, and best-selling author who flatlined three times after a near-fatal gang attack. Shane rebuilt his life from homelessness, then built a mortgage empire, penned best-selling books, and set push-up world records. Now he crafts premium roasts with his daughter, Charlie, every Sunday, blending resilience and rich flavor in each cup. I've asked Shane to join us here today to tell his story from survival to entrepreneurship and insights into sales strategy, small business, work-life balance, and perseverance running a successful small business. So Shane, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing super. Thanks so much for having.
Yeah, and I appreciate you being here. We've had a couple of good conversations already for hit and record. And before we get too far into this, I guess you start off as a Marine. What got you into kind of the small business and farming? Are you carrying the torch from your parents? Was that what they did and you're going back to your roots?
Yeah. So my family was cattle ranchers in their orange grove. They basically raised oranges in Florida. And to be honest with you, I hated every second of it. I never thought in a million years I'd go back to it in that sense. Cause it's just, yeah, Marine Corps was easier than growing up on the ranching world. And my family was rodeoers and we're up at 4 a.m. working cows, riding horses, burning in the sun in Florida in the heat. And it was brutal, man. And the way we were raised is that we weren't allowed a horse until we got to a certain age or we became of value to the ranch. So I spent, my grandfather had about 300 plus acres and I had to run by foot most of the time. If we were out running cattle, I didn't get a horse because it was too expensive. I had to run on foot. So the Marine Corps was great because by the time I got in there, I had my conditioning down pretty good.
Yeah.
make the runs and do the training.
Man, upbringing that is. You must have hated it, but what a blessing that is in disguise. My goodness.
It's a story unto itself. It's sweet. And when you're younger, the cattle sometimes get stuck up in the palmetto bushes and the horses couldn't get in there because the palmettos have like razor blades sides to them. And the cows, the mama cow gets stuck in there. She's protected. She doesn't want to get the baby, but we got to pull a calf out. So my dad would be like, boy, get in there and get that calf out of there. So I'd have to run in and try to chase the mom around and get the baby out and then throw a rope around. And man, it was crazy. So Marine Corps was a blessing. That's how I ended up into the Marine Corps. Plus Jake's dig the outfit. So I was like, you know what? I want to be the best and I want to get the hell out of this ranching life. So later on, full circle culmination of all those things, what led us to us. And to be honest with you, how this ended up didn't have anything to do with me. It was obviously my daughter that started it. And then the farming, I think, just clicked later on. I used a couple of the things I didn't realize were there that I would use, pulled them into this new innovative approach to it. And I was able to pull from those experiences, tap into it. And that's how we ended up in coffee farming.
So what do you mean? You said it was your daughter's idea. Your daughter's like, Dad, let's start a farm. I'm going to start an online e-commerce store. And what part, can you walk us through that piece of it?
Yeah, I've spent the last, kind of my brand as a motivational speaker, as most people here stateside know me for running across America multiple times. So I've ran about 11,000 miles across the United States, either East Coast to West Coast or down the Eastern Seaboard or Western Seaboard. And I've done it each year raising for awareness for different causes. And kind of the structure was building kind of a CSR platform for corporate companies to be able to tell a story over a long period of time that allows them to address a cause. So if a corporation was like, hey, we really want to be able to support veteran homelessness, what I would do is I would shoot content, videos, or documentaries that would last over a course of, I would do 22 miles a day for 65 days straight. We would package that up and run it through all their social media platforms and raise money and raise awareness for that cause. And it just became a thing. And when my daughter was born, right around the time I really started to do it, and it goes back a lot of steps, but ultimately I was homeless for a couple of years. And I knew that later on in life, I wanted to find a way to support that community and get back based on my experiences, find a way to maybe change it, fix it. As I went through that, I realized that the success rate was extremely small and that I needed to start back in the corporate world. And again, in mortgage banking, you work with a lot of senior level, mid-level management, pretty successful people compared to what we consider successful. Mm-hmm. And one thing was interesting is they love their work more than their family. And I hated that because I think they didn't see the end result of that byproduct. Yeah, because it was the children weren't being paid attention to, the spouse was having problems. And then it leads to these gateway things, right? Like attention to someone else and drugs. And then so when I was looking at the homeless, and I started asking a lot of questions to the community when I was sleeping and being a part of it, say, how many of you have your dads involved in your life? And I would say 99.9% of the time, the dad was not involved. You'd have mom, you'd have grandma, you'd have some type of, most of the time, a female interaction that was in there, but Fathers were just nowhere to be found. So it really, I put that all together. I went back home and I was like, you know what? I'm going to develop a coaching program. I'm going to write a book. It's called Done by 2:30. I'm going to start teaching people how to be better CEOs of their home life than their business. And I'm going to stop getting corporations to spend millions of dollars for sales reps to build a relationship with a complete stranger on barter exchange of money. And I'm going to find a way to develop a program that allows the family to be able to communicate and build a tight-knit community. Because whether you're an entrepreneur or you're working in a business, you're going to have failures. And the best support system you can have is your home. And that's the part. When you're out slaying dragons and you're getting slayed for that matter, and you come back home to have an amazing partner and children who love you is a great recharge. And if you don't have that, you know, that's going to be tough. If you got to fight there and fight at home, it's going to be hard.
What's it all for anyways? In some ways, I feel it's a shame that people have lost their sense of posterity, their sense of owing their ancestors something for their blood, sweat, and tears that they endured to make my life possible today. I think about this all the time when I'm driving down the road. I think about how many people spent how many days, months, and possibly even years slaving away in the hot sun to build this road so I can go where I'm going in 15 minutes. You know, and like, same thing like right now. Like, I don't know how to build a microphone. I don't know how to build a laptop. I didn't lay the cables through the oceans to connect the planet and figure out fiber optic internet. Like, I didn't figure any of this stuff out. And it's like, we are the tip of the spear on millions and millions of lives that have existed and dedicated their whole existence to building something so we could do this today. And I think we've entered an era where people have become really hedonistic and selfish. And to a certain extent, I get it because I get it. People want to live a good life. You don't want to just slave away. But there's a lack, like people talk about the environment and but then when it comes down, like you say, to their own families or their neighbors, how many people that live in a big city actually know and talk to their neighbors around them? So there's a huge disconnect. It's virtue signaling versus real world action. So I love that. I love that. Can we rewind a little bit? So, all right. So you worked on the ranch, you got out of that. Can you walk us through? You went straight into the Marines after you left the ranch for the Marines?
I did. So I graduated high school 3 days later. I was in the Corps. I actually signed up a year. You can sign up at 17 as long as your parents sign off on it. So I signed up at 17 as part of their initial pre-program. Second, I graduated high school 3 days later. I was on the bus and I was in Parris Island.
Wow. Okay. So what was that like?
It was awesome. I think the best part of the military experience I had was in the beginning, going to no longer having to deal with the ranch or my dad getting yelled at and doing all that.
Somebody else yelling at you.
Yeah, but that's okay. I appreciated the fact of being able to earn a title and make a different movement in my life and do it for myself versus other people. So the Marine Corps was amazing in the boot camp stage. And I remember we have a letter that we all save. I wrote back and I was like, I love this place. I never want to come home. Whereas everybody else is crying and saying, mommy, come get me. I was right at home. My Marine Corps career was awesome. I graduated top of my class out of boot camp. I was promoted 3 times before you got to the fleet, which is challenging to do. And I loved it. I served as an infantryman with 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines in 29 Palms in the Mojave Desert. And I've been about a year there. And then I went to Marine Reconnaissance Unit at Camp Pendleton in Margarita and served with them. And yeah, it was great. I love Marine Corps. It was an awesome time.
So when you retired at some point?
Yeah, yes. I was in during 9/11, right when everything happened. The unit I was with, Marine Recon, is in special operations units. Think of it like Navy SEALs of the Marine Corps, even though we don't like to coin that. We were before the Navy SEALs. It's the unit I was with. We were training with what's called operators. These guys are sniper, ranger, combat dive. They go to all the cool schools you watch the movies in. It was great being part of that unit. But during my time going through the program or the pipeline, what ended up happening is I had a couple of guys that I served with in 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines that went to State Platoon or sniper school. And once they graduated sniper school, they said, hey, listen, I got a good friend of mine lives up the road in Corona. He was like, let's all go hang out with his mom's used to having a bunch of boys over. She'll cook us some food, play some basketball out in the front yard. And I was like, man, that'd be awesome. We took off. I was a little later. At the time when I was coming out of the back of the base, the gang MS-13 was targeting members of the military in order for gang initiation. I just happened to be that person that they picked. They chased after me with a car. I was on my motorcycle. They hit me and I flipped off my motorcycle and caught the corner of a brick house at 45 miles an hour. Okay. Ended up breaking all of my bones in my upper body, all of my major organs were lacerated. My left bicep was lacerated. I was bleeding out. My ribs punctured my lungs. I had 356 old pieces of my lungs, and I was taking one full breath every minute. And when I hit the ground, they got out, 3 of them. They started kicking me, robbed me. The goal was to kill me. They thought I was dead, got back in the car, headed out. Nobody would help me because of the gang. So I ended up getting up myself. with all those injuries, put my right hand over my left bicep, and I started walking 2 blocks, taking one full breath every minute. Got to a fire station. There happened to be a doctor on site. They brought in a helicopter. I flatlined out the first time. They brought me back. During that time, they were trying to put chest tubes into me, but my ribs were broken so bad and my entire chest plate was broken that it was shifting and expanding because all of the fluid was basically spilling out of my organs and spilling into my lungs. And so I was having a lot of trouble. They couldn't obviously do chest compressions, so they had to put the sticker paddles on me to pop me back. During that time, they basically took a thumb-sized tube and ran it in and cut me open right there with a scalpel, just split me right open, ran a tube into my chest, drained out all the fluid. And at that point, my lungs just kind of went and I couldn't breathe. So they were trying to put the oxygen thing on me, but I couldn't, I didn't have
squeeze it
lungs
in.
to breathe. Yeah. So I couldn't get it in. So it was like fighting against it while enduring this pain. So we landed at the hospital. I flatlined out for the second time. Matter of fact, I flatlined so long out this time, they had called back to my unit and said that I didn't make it. They brought me back, got into the hospital. They started to intubate me, flatlined out for the third time. They brought me back. And then I spent about probably a total of 8 months in the hospital, about a year and a half. Well, I say maybe about a year rehabbing total. I was in CCU, ICU, lost about 54 pounds in 2 weeks, had to learn how to walk, talk, and breathe again. And then probably about a year, I'd say about a year later, I was actually back what we call fully operational. So I had, and because of my lungs, I had zero surgeries. So basically they just threw me in a hospital bed, threw a bunch of chest tubes in me, had 3 chest tubes, and just said, good luck. We hope that you heal, because there was nothing they could do. They couldn't put me under with my lungs. They couldn't fix anything. I basically just had to lay there with tape and tubes and just hope to God that I healed up. And that's basically the gist of that experience. And then again, about a year after that, I was what they call fully operational. So I was back to running 3 miles in under 18 minutes, doing 20 pull-ups and 100 crunches in under 2 minutes.
I imagine that had a massive impact on your outlook on life in general, like what you thought was a problem before versus what you thought were problems after. Priorities, how did those shift?
Yeah, so that comes like seasons, and I'm still dealing with it to this day. So there's, I think the biggest part of it from, yes, it gives me a competitive advantage over most people, because when people start to look into my bio or they read into me and they go, man, you did all these push-ups, you did these world records, you ran across America, holy cow. They don't realize that I only have 40% use of my right arm. I have severe nerve damage. I'm actually losing massive functionality and fine motor skills in my fingers. I drop stuff all the time. I only have 40% use of my lungs. I'm in constant pain 24/7. Like literally, I just live in pain all day, every day. And I fight a lot with survivor's guilt. I served with a lot of guys that didn't come back. I was given a second chance at life. And it took me a long time to try to figure out what that is and why it was given to me. So people will say, man, you've accomplished all these great things and you've been through all these challenges, and it could be a movie and a book, and we want to hear so much about it. And I love that, because that's my responsibility. That's my lease on life, is to share that, to hopefully help. But ultimately, it's really just a different form of addiction versus drugs and alcohol. I just do these things as penance to pay God back for this lease that I have on a second chance.
Yeah. What do you feel is your why? What, obviously, this has been a big soul searching issue for you. What's the current answer that you've got?
Yeah, so I've learned about that Simon Sinek kind of thing about defining your why. I actually wrote a book on that called 3,000 Miles for Your Why, Hike Across America, and how far are you willing to go for your purpose? And I was willing to run across America for mine. And of course, over life, it's changed. But for me now, my current why and reason is my daughter. And it has been for the last 10 years. Every bit of ounce of everything I have is because of her. That's my main purpose and main focus right now.
I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that so much. So you want to tell for people that don't know your story, they're just kind of listening to this and enthralled. Can you just share, what's your relationship with your daughter? Can you talk about her claim to fame?
Yeah, man. It's like having the best friend you could ever have in the entire world, right?
That's right.
It's what you hope that you get in a partner. When you have a daughter, the way they look at you is the perfection of what makes a man great. Like the way that they love you and support you and care about you makes you feel like you can just accomplish anything in the
run
world.
Run through walls. That's right.
Run through walls. And it is the most purest. I have never in my life ever experienced love like I have for my daughter. I am grateful to be able to have access to that. She's my emotional support animal. She keeps me in line. When I think I'm second guessing myself, she looks at me and I realize that I have that purpose and I know I can accomplish anything. And sometimes I feel like we're so pretentious as parents and we think we know everything. And I think what's happened is God, again, a higher power in life, put these children at a certain age for us at 4 to 12 time frame, I think, to be teachers to us. We just don't pay attention to it because their vision of dreams makes us rethink all that cynical thought process we have to go, wait a minute, God is telling me something, and it's through this little human, and this little human is reinvigorating, re-inspiring me to go out and do the things and remember that dreams can come true. And if you could pay attention to that, man, and grab a hold of it and bottle it, holy cow, you do some pretty amazing things.
I believe that wholeheartedly. So I was an orphan. I was raised by my step adopted dad. And he has this thing, he said, I always thought you became an adult to have kids, but now I realize having kids makes you an adult. That part, you learned it.
Great.
So for
Yeah.
those that can't see the video, this is Malaya. I want to say hi, Malaya. And she wanted to come and share her story. You want to share about what was your business? You remember you got started? What was it? What's that?
We sell stickers and necklaces.
That's right.
We did this like two-day selling thing and selling that, and I got so much money.
Yeah, she did like $500 selling 20-cent stickers and epoxy molded jewelry, and we polished a bunch of gemstones and like a rock tumbler and turned them into earrings and necklaces and that sort of stuff. Her and her mom, I got a rock polisher just to kind of show her the idea of polishing. It starts off this rough thing and you just keep working and you get these beautiful things after. And her and her mom, all of a sudden, it turned into this idea of, hey, let's make some jewelry out of this. And they're like, we can't wear all this jewelry. And then there was a kids farm event that was coming up, our kids farmers or kid market. I forget what it was, some event. And I said, we're going to do, Maya, you're going to have a stall there. Let's get some sort of thing going. So she did that. She made, like $500 on 20-cent thing. So she wanted to come on and share. She heard about your daughter, thought that was inspiring, and wanted to say hi to her and mention her story. So thank you, sweetheart. Is there anything
Yeah,
else
it's a
you want to
great
say?
story. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Is there anything else you want to say? No, are you shy? Okay, she's shy now. All right, thanks, sweetheart. Thank you for coming and sharing. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about how did this kick off with you and your daughter? You said it was her inspiration. So where did it come in?
Yeah, so like I was saying, I put that book together. I was really focusing on that. I'd finish up the manuscript. It came downstairs. And of course, Charlie has been with me in all of these ventures and things ever since she was a baby. And we've been inseparable in that sense. And because I would say there's a tad bit of conditioning there. And I came downstairs and she looked at me and she says, Dad, you know what? I want to start a business. And it was like, Dad, I want to dance, or Dad, I want to do gymnastics, or Dad, I want to ride a pony. And thank goodness she said I wanted to start a business. Is that what I knew how to do? My dancing sucks and I'm not getting on any more horses. She said that. And I said, and it was like at that moment where I selfishly was like, ooh, this is something we can do together that I can keep her around with me all the time. You know, and I can find an excuse to where we can do this stuff and I can build something around that. And so everyone's, oh, you're such a great dad. I'm like, oh, I was 100% selfish. I was like, all right, this is an excuse. And I said, you know what? You come up with the name and the logo. And she always knows that dad says something, he keeps his word. That's one of the staples of the way I do things. And I said, you do it. I said, I'll stop everything I'm doing right now and we'll do it. Because if the number one person that you believe in spiritually or coach or leader or anything gives you a commitment and doesn't follow through with it, it's going to be hard for you to trust people in the future.
Oh, yeah.
So when she said she wanted to do it, I said, come up with the name and the logo. And I said, let's be very clear. When you do this, you're doing this.
Yeah.
I said, it will not be my business. We will not play off your dad's brand. I said, it will be something that we do together. But you will sell it. You will make the decisions. You will run it. I will put you in. 30 minutes later, she came up with Big Guns Coffee. And I said, why'd you call it Big Guns? And she says, you know what, Dad? She goes, I just finished breaking the world record for the push-ups. And she says, not everybody can be strong like you. She's, but maybe they can feel like it. And coffee does that. And she said, I think it'd be a great way for people to feel strong a little bit and start their day off good. And I was like, dang. This kid's a good salesperson.
Yeah,
I was like, this
that's
is pretty
really
good. Yeah, yeah. So I was like, I'm closed. And then we just rolled right on through it and just went all.
I love that. So what have been some of the biggest challenges for maybe for her, obviously doing this at such a young age, but even just in the journey itself of running a business with her?
She knows it's a complete nightmare being an entrepreneur. I tell her all the time, look, there's nothing about it that's fun. There are fun moments, but being a true entrepreneur is way more failures than there are
Oh, yeah.
successes, right? You're hoping for that one. And very rarely does anyone actually get that one. And
Yep.
I'll give you an example. This past 2 weeks has been the hardest 2 weeks for us that we have ever had in almost the 4 or 5 years of what we're doing, because we're getting ready to launch in 900 stores between Sprouts and Walmarts nationwide. We spent a year nurturing these relationships and closing these deals. This side of it, big box retail, we're completely naive to. There's certain things we don't know or understand, operational supply chain. There's things that we're learning as we go, because that was not my background. So this is something new that we're learning together. We do a lot of media hits. We're on a lot of podcasts. We're doing a lot of stuff for social media. So trying to manage that time, I homeschooler. Right. So we're doing homeschool on top of it. And this past week, our small town that we're in, we installed a roaster to meet the need for 427 stores for our Sprouts launch. We needed 11,578 bags, and it's me and her. All right. And I got two other Marines, disabled Marines, guys that helped out. And we all jumped in, and it was a nightmare. We had 3 weeks to do it operationally, but we did it because that's what Marines do. And we got it done. The town that we are in, there is a developer here pushing out small businesses. And basically, the town found a loophole that we are manufacturing on Main Street because we're roasting green coffee, taking green coffee to roasted coffee. They came out with filed a cease and desist on us to shut us down within 30 days. And we have 346 stores to launch in Walmart in the next 8 days.
Wow.
And then on top of that, because of my lack of knowledge, the 11,578 bags that we sent out, I forgot to put Best Buy date stickers on, which means that all of that inventory about was going to be given away because
Wow.
by FDA regulation, they couldn't take it. So every single penny we had, every single time and money that I've spent on it that went into those stores about got wiped.
Right.
So, of course, I get on the phone. Hey, what do we do? What do we do? We had to hire a company to go to each one of these distribution centers across the US to put these stickers on it, and it ate every single profit, every single penny.
Right.
So we just basically did all of that for zero profit, with the hopes that our product will launch in the stores and that people will grab it off the shelves and take it. So we had all these challenges, and now we've got 8 days to get out 8,250 boxes for our Walmart launch, and we're going to be shut down from being able to roast in order to do that. So I'm working 18-hour days to make it up, to get caught up, to get everything taken care of, to hopefully get to that point to launch. And then she and I went to Reno, and before this, we knew this happened. We sold almost 12,000 bags, and launching in California, Hawaii, and Oregon, with the expectations that we were going to be able to keep roasting. And now we have that order coming up in the next month, and we're out of cash, right? So we've got to figure out a way to leverage all of these net 30s and supply chain and time and make these calls. And it's business. It's just part of business. It's a
Yep.
struggle. But it is by far the best teacher, and she's learning so much about the realities of life and business and the challenges and the calls
Oh,
we have to
yeah.
make that suck. And so that's the biggest challenges that we're facing right now, in the weeds right now.
And what do you think are the most important habits to see you through?
For me personally, I've been through enough adversity that hustling a little coffee and doing what we're doing is nothing. It still sucks, I'm not gonna lie, but it's nothing compared to what I've been through. Worst case scenario, we lose some money, we figure it out, we make some phone calls, we get our butts chewed to us. It's nothing compared to fighting for your life or fighting for others. It is tough, but that perseverance kind of sticks with me. But at the same time, I think the thing that keeps going is just my daughter. I'm not going to let her down on her business. We're not going to let this down. We got this far, and we're going to let it push us back. We're going to let somebody push us out. Like, I'm not going to let that cancer seep in, but we're
Yeah.
going to continue pushing forward.
I love that. I love that. I love that so much. So would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling right now? If they're listening to this and they're either considering getting started in a business or they've got a business and they're in a rough spot, if everything you said hasn't inspired them so far, what would you say?
I think the big part is just this. I think this is amazing that you ask these questions on this podcast, because everyone wants to surface over all the successes. And personally, I always hate those interviews, because the reality of it is I want to know other people are going through the same pain so I don't feel like a complete idiot all the time. I want somebody to share, like, oh my God, I made a mistake and this is what I did. So that way I know that they went through it and they found a way to fix it. It gives me hope. Because as an entrepreneur, you're very alone. And a lot of times you don't have a circle of people that have been through those, or mentors a lot of times that can guide you. And that loneliness can get pretty dangerous. So I think it's good to be around others that have been through failures, grab a great mentor, grab someone that has been through that, and they're not scared to tell you those failures and be vulnerable. I'm not scared to tell you that we got our butts handed over the last couple of weeks, because that's the reality of it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and be like, everything's great, because that's a lie. That's not true. It will be, but in order for anything to be great, you've got to go through some adversity. So I think the big thing is just know you're not alone. Understand that there are others out there, and find you a good tribe of people that you can, they can share that with you, and they've been through it and they can walk you through that process.
I love that. And the only thing I would add is that make sure that they're in touch with a why, that they have a why, because if they don't have a why, then it makes it so tough. If you're just doing something to pay your bills or because you want to be able to watch Netflix at night, it's not going to motivate you. But if you're doing it for your children, for your ancestors, for your offspring, if you're doing this for some sort of legacy, if it connects with your inner spark, nothing will stop you. And I think one of the things that's really clear to me right now is it's grind season, more so than ever. I feel like we're entering one of the most competitive periods in human history, just which has been enabled by technology and just how small the planet is, so to speak, in this day and age. And everything is in flux right now, and it's creating amazing opportunities. And it's grind season, not just like work and sacrifice your relationships. It's grind for all of it. It's to look at, do I really need to be spending this time on social media? Do I really need to watch Netflix at night? Am I really using my time as well as I could be, should be? Do I really have the proper advisors that I need to have? Am I butting my head against the wall because I've never done this before, or whatever? Or am I thinking too and playing too small, or any of this stuff? And then some things, there is no excuse for it. You can't outsmart. You just got to have stamina, and you just got to be able to outwork it. Some things you just have to be powerful. That's really it. Some things you just have to be able to get through. And if you don't have tapped, if you're not tapped into your deeper why, if you don't really have that inner resilience, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. All this is going to happen, right? I listened to something recently. It was like, your car is going to break down. The bank's going to foreclose on your home. Someone's going to steal money from you. All that stuff's going to happen. And if you're soft, you're not going to make it. You're just not going to make it. Some gazelles need to be eaten by lions because lions need to eat. That's what it is. You just get to decide it. Was it the successful are self-made and the unsuccessful are self-made too? But success is many fathers and failure is an orphan. Nobody wants to admit that they self-made themselves into an unsuccessful person. And I think that's really a separator. And at the end of the day, we're all going to die anyways. In 5,000 years, many of you know this is going to matter anyhow. So we like have some fun with it at the same time. So put this back on your shoes. We're going through a lot geopolitically, technologically. What do you see? What are you paying attention to over the next sort of 5-year time horizon? What do you got your eyes on?
We're pretty hyper focused on the indoor hydroponic side of it, of coffee farming. So right now, our main objective is controlled indoor agriculture. We're looking at innovative ways to utilize technology and AI to implement that, but merge it with traditional type thought processes, not be just one or the other. Eventually, space is expensive and it is getting limited as the world expands, and food is a large part of that. And transparency over food, I will say consumers become so much more educated than they were before. And so having transparency into what is going into our food, and I really think in a positive light of the world, and let's say Western culture, at least, there's other countries have been on it for a bit. I think the Western culture is finally starting to pay attention to the fact of local, homegrown transparency to what's going into our food, eating a little bit more healthier, but not just being consumers when it comes to food. I do think we're starting to get a little bit better. That generation is really starting to pay attention to the items that are in there and what we're putting in our bodies. And I think that's important. So we're really hyper-focused on that right now, at least from a niche of coffee anyway.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really important. The hometown I'm from, the university there, did a study on squirrels. I know it sounds like it's completely out of left field, but bear with me here. They did a study on squirrels. They sat in the park and they monitored the squirrels, and they were trying to track squirrels stealing nuts that other squirrels buried. And the conclusion of their study was, if a squirrel had stolen nuts another squirrel had buried, when it was burying a nut, if a squirrel saw it, it would finish burying it, it would leave. And when that squirrel left, it would come back and move it. But the squirrels that never stole stuff, they'd be burying it. They'd be like, oh, hey, what's up, George? And they just bury it and they just walk away because they couldn't fathom that sort of nefarious, I wouldn't do it. I couldn't imagine someone would do it. And I think that, like you talk about people paying attention to this, we're starting to realize that there are you have a million people. There's a whole lot of different sort of niches in there, and a certain percentage of them are psychopaths. They're sociopaths, they're psychopaths, they'll put profit over everything. And I think people are starting to come and waking up to that, which speaks to what you're saying, where people are like, I want something where I know the farmer that grew what I'm eating, because I don't, like, how many hands is this going through? And something so important. And so I think that's part of it. I don't think necessarily that the world's getting worse. I think things are coming to light. I think that the majority of people are good people, and that as we get this smartened up, I'm hoping that we're entering a new golden age. But you gotta, what's the saying? I don't know what the saying is, but it's going to get darker before it gets brighter type thing. You know what I mean? It's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows in the beginning. So I really think that's powerful. What do you think are going to be some of the most important skills and behaviors for someone to have over the next 5, 10 years as we go through all these transitions with technology and politics, all that stuff?
I think it's more retro. I think what's interesting is we're moving so fast that we're forgetting about the natural human connection and communication, or just our pure laziness. Or I have this saying, we purchase pleasure for our inability to endure pain. And corporate companies basically market towards that, right? So their job, anything that is a pain, don't want pain, don't worry, we'll take that away. You don't want to have to struggle and figure it out, don't worry, we'll take that away. It's just like the medical companies with the pain pills. It's just a different version of it. So I think, and then just going back to just the basic communication on eye level, right? Checking somebody's hand, having a great conversation, small talk, really being engaged in someone and learning more about them. But the technology has really disassociated that, you know, taking tone out of text messaging and creating emojis, which is a different version of hieroglyphics, and dumbing down our ability to be able to communicate. So I think, again, going retro, I tell Charlie that all the time. So we're going for audition for Shark Tank in a couple of weeks. And one of the very first things I taught Charlie was shaking someone's hand firmly and looking them in the eye. When you shake a gentleman's hand, you shake your hand with your right hand, you grab the bottom of their elbow. Good afternoon, sir. I'm Charlie, CEO of Big Guns Coffee. It's a pleasure to meet you. When you shake a woman's hand, you shake her hand, you put your hand over the woman's hand, you say, ma'am, it's a pleasure to meet you, CEO of Big Guns Coffee. Look them straight in the eye. And it's funny because she'll do that on the sales floor, talking to people or whatever. And she's still so enamored by, we'll get done. And she'll go, Dad, I can't believe how surprised people are about my handshake. And I said, you know what the thing is, doing something that used to be the norm is so simple is the competitive advantage of today. Right. I said, the ability to be able to walk around as a young teenager, almost a preteen, and go around and communicate to people is going to give you the biggest competitive advantage over everyone else during your generation when you go to work. Because you're going to walk in confident, you're going to have amazing interpersonal skills, you're going to be able to communicate, you're going to shake someone's hand, and they're going to be blown away that you're able to do that. And it's going to allow you to just shoot through up. So I think just going old school, man, shaking a hand, looking someone in the eye, having good communication and talking with them, because technology is just going to end up basically communicating for you, which is going to take away from what makes us humans. I think that's going to create its own set of challenges.
I love that. When you're saying that, it made me think, I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 6 years. I trained with Hicks and Gracie, got my blue belt from him and this stuff. And they say virtue is doing the fundamentals uncommonly well. And so one of the things that I love the most and I learned in Jiu-Jitsu is there's always like somebody coming out with a new DVD of like new fancy double backflip, this sort of thing. But at the highest levels, the fundamentals are fundamental because they work even at the highest levels. And one of the most winningest competitors is Hodger Gracie. And he's not my superhero, but he's got a phenomenal, nothing but respect track record. And everybody knows what he's going to do. That's the thing. There's no surprise. He's going to judo throw you. He's going to get on top mount and he's going to gi choke you. And he does it to everybody. And there's no surprise. Okay, here it comes. He's going to try to judo throw me. And he's doing like this against the best in the world. And this is stuff you learn in your first 6 months in training in most places. And so I think that's what I was thinking about. Like you're just talking like just solid, like people to people, good fundamentals, just doing good business, having a good product or service, making a good deal, keeping your promises, admitting your faults and weaknesses, trying to build good relationships, not handling bullshit. Don't tolerate people that still don't have their shit together and just keep moving forward and try to have, I think one of the things that maybe needs to be said is also being a little bit more proactive, preparing for rainy days. I think that's something so much of our society is now built on this whole 30-day hand to mouth living. And that's not how it was. That's not how it used to be. People used to have inherent wealth and stuff. You guys as a rancher, you'd never be hungry. You just go out and slaughter something. You got meat for a month. There is innate wealth, and you don't have that in a condo in New York when it's you and your houseplant and your cat and your bank account that the government can shut off in half a second. I think there's a bit to that as well in terms of we've gotten so far removed from the behaviors and philosophies that help make our civilization great that I think that's great advice.
Well, that's built by design, right? That's a whole other level of entities breaking away the structure of independence of a human and making them a robot in a sense. So that's
for sure.
A whole different level in that.
And it's an evolution. I told my friends, I said this to my friends because I have friends back in Canada. Canada's not in the best shape right now. And I was like, guys, I got this idea for a movie. foreign powers know they can't win a war with guns and bombs and tanks and bullets. So instead, what they do is they buy a bunch of politicians and media outlets and academics, and they just convince the local population to self-destruct and adopt self-destructive behaviors. And then they can just buy up all the land and just move in, and they don't have to fire a single bullet. What do you guys think about my movie idea? And it was just kind of like crickets. And now you get it. I see you smile. It's, where did this stuff come from? And it's whatever. I think life is a fractal. And so I think we're all just little bits of history repeating, so to speak. And so I had this conversation. I'm a spiritual man, not so religious. But I had a talk with an older man in my life that I have a lot of respect for. And he's like really anti-religion. I was like, okay, you explain to me how I'm supposed to, if I can't tell the seven deadly sins, seven virtues, you tell me how I'm supposed to explain morality to my 4, 5, 6-year-old child. And worries that she's going to understand. I know there's a lot of contradiction in a lot of these books. And I know that there's people that use it for nefarious means. But the stories, they're simple stories. And it's a meme for human flourishing. A lot of this stuff, show me someone that emphasizes the seven virtues, heavenly virtues, that isn't living a good life. Show me someone that's embodying the seven deadly sins and is living a good life. Like, some of this stuff is common sense at the end of the day, but people get so distracted. Like you said, it's none of your competitors are going to tell you to pick up. No one's coming to rescue you. No one's going to tell you to push harder. All your competitors are going to go because they want to do better than you do. Even your friends, your family, your coworkers, they all want to do better than you do. So you're like, oh, I need this excuse and I need to sit down. They're going to go, you're right. You should take down. Because they want you to slow down. Like, you don't get that. Most people don't get that. And so you got to find that fire within, which again comes back to your why. And I think you've got a really amazing story. Not trying to blow hot air up your ass, but I think credit where it's due. I also want to be respectful of your time. We've covered so much stuff. People may want to listen to this more than once. Shane, is there anything that I haven't been asking you or haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, sir. It was a great piece, great conversation. I think a lot of people take some great nuggets away from it. I think there's something to be said about being authentic and sharing. Yes, some great questions. And I think that'll allow people to resonate and hopefully put them in the position to say, you know what? All right, I can get through this too, considering their situation. So it was just a great episode.
Yeah. And if people want to learn more, if they want to connect, if they want to give you a call to help talk with their company or help them with their business, or they want to get involved, buy some coffee, what are some of the best ways for them to connect and get in touch?
Yeah, so websites, biggunscoffee.com or tshaneinspires.com. And of course, all of our social media handles is at bigguns coffee or at tshanejohnson.
So go to bigguns coffee.com. That's bigguns coffee.com. And you said it was tshaneinspires.com?
tshaneinspires, yes, sir.
S-H-A-N-E-I-N-S-P-I-R-E-S. tshaneinspires, tshaneinspires.com. Go check those out. Go buy some coffee. Shane, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an honor and a pleasure knowing you've got your own deadlines to deal with, your own followers, your own family, your own direct reports. Thank you for coming and sharing a little bit of time with my family and my audience and I, so we can all do a little bit better.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having us and allowing us the opportunity to share our story and your platform with your listeners.